Judges chapter 11. In our study so far of this period of time, of course, we've noted that it is a time of rebellion. After the death of Joshua, the people began to worship idols and do so over and over and over again. And the consequences they should have known, as Moses had told them a number of times and Joshua had told them, the consequences of their rebellion against God. Now, very quickly, we're going to know these passages by heart by the time we're through with this portion of our study. Moses, as he brought them up out of Egypt, warned them in the wilderness in the book of Deuteronomy. Where are the chapters? Deuteronomy chapter 4, 8, 28 through 30. All right, very good. Joshua had warned them in Joshua chapter 23, there beginning at verse 14 through verse 16. If you worship idols, this is what's going to happen to you. And so it did. After Joshua's death in Judges chapter 2, in verse 10, we have a new generation on the scene that knew not God nor the mighty works that he wrought in Israel. We began then with the people worshiping idols, and Othniel becomes the first of the judges, then Ehud. Shamgar is mentioned in chapter 3, Deborah in chapter 4, Gideon in chapter 6. We talked about Abimelech. Why he's listed in most lists of the judges remains somewhat of a mystery, but Abimelech, though he's considered one of the judges in many lists, what was he? All right, he made himself to be a king. What ultimately happened to him? Well, he died. He was killed. That's right. And then we've got, after 3 years, things appeared to be going fairly well for him. Tola, Jair, Jephthah, Ibsen, Elon, and Abdon, and then Samson, Eli, and Samuel is the list of the judges, and that takes us on into the book of 1 Samuel somewhat. We'll talk about that given time this evening. In our study this evening, we want to talk about the period of time beginning with Jephthah. We talked about Jephthah's position, how that he was not considered all that important, but yet because of who his mother was, and then he was asked to be the leader of these people to lead them against the oppression of the Ammonites. And Jephthah conceded to do so as the Ammonites attacked the tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan. We talked about Jephthah's story and Samson's story running somewhat contemporary. We talked about these gods, Baal and the female version of the goddess of fertility, Ashtoreth or Asherah as the plural is given. We've discussed all of those things, and I want to pick our study up in chapter 11. Here we go. Called upon to help the Israelites in the battle, chapter 11. They battled the Ammonites and drove them back, and during this time, the Philistines are on the horizon. That sets the stage, of course, for the things we want to talk about during the time or life of Samson. Now, let me pass beyond two or three of these. I don't want to eliminate them from the series, but I do want to talk about Jephthah's vow. We talked about that just as we were running out of time last time, and I want to reiterate that whether or not Jephthah kept his vow and killed his daughter is not really the thing that I want us to focus on, because, frankly, I don't know with a degree of certainty whether he did or didn't, and there are some reasons for that. First of all, what was his vow? Why was it so foolish?
He said that if God would be with him and let them win that battle, that he would sacrifice whatever first came out of his house to greet him.
All right. Now, when his daughter came out, of course, he said, I cannot go back. And his daughter conceded. What did she say, or what was her attitude? All right, all right. And then what did she ask? Have 2 months. That's right, to mourn her virginity. She would not have children and so forth. We note in verse 39, it says, who did with her according to his vow which he had vowed, and she knew not man. We note that this became a custom in Israel for 4 days in the year to be set aside for an observance of this event. Yes.
That says that she they didn't go through with that according to Jewish tradition. What they did do to replace it was she became a spinster for the rest of
the year. Yeah. I've read that. I want to emphasize that regarding this vow, we need to emphasize the seriousness of taking a vow. We talked about that somewhat last time. We didn't talk about, to any extent, how that God had forbidden human sacrifices. Yes, Randy? Okay. Yes? Well, that's fine. I have no objection to saying, well, he did. I just am not in the position of being dogmatic that he did or that he didn't. And my reasons are, if we affirm confidently that he did, then we have him blatantly, knowingly, deliberately doing something that he knew God did not want him to do. And that raises some flags that I don't know the answers to. For example, if you turn to Leviticus chapter 18, what had God already said about human sacrifices? Would he accept them? Well, would he accept those who offered them? Indeed. He did. That's true. And he's referred to as a man after God's own heart, but yet David recognized what he did as sinful, and we read about his attitude toward that in Psalms chapter 51. Yeah, well, I'm going to let it stand. I'm not going to take a firm stand and say, well, he did or he didn't, because frankly, I don't know. And if we're confident enough to say that he did, then that's fine. I have no problem with that either, except I don't want to do that necessarily, because it's affirming that he did something knowingly and deliberately that was wrong. Okay, we'll just let it stand. We'll let it stand on the basis of what it says. And that's where I'll leave that. But what I want to emphasize is not the question of whether he did or didn't. What I want to emphasize is whether he should have ever taken this vow to start with or not. The seriousness of vows. The seriousness of vows is where we need to leave that thing. If you vow to do something that's sinful, are you obligated before God to go through with it? You better be careful about making the vow. It's the point I want us to understand. Yeah?
I had a question about a slide or two back.
Oh.
So, you said that there was some overlap with Jephthah and Samson?
Perhaps. As far as the time frame is concerned. Where did we have that? I don't remember. Okay, yeah. I recall making that statement, yes. As far as the time element is concerned, I don't remember which slide it's on. Pardon me? Okay. Okay. Okay, one of the things that we want to remember about the period of the judges, peace in one section of the country does not necessitate that there was peace throughout the whole land. There may have been a period of peace that existed for, say, 40 years here, but not necessarily down here. So when we look at these years and just add them up consecutively, it does not necessarily mean that they were consecutive years.
Weren't there also a couple of judges that were sort of regional, that weren't over the whole...
So well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, you have judges that were in the north that met certain opposition from that area and then some in the south. In fact, when you look at Jephthah and Samson, we're looking at different enemies that they fought. Samson's enemies were the Philistines. Jephthah fought against the Ammonites. Now, the region where some of the battles took place were not all that far away. But it would indicate that the possibility that some of this unrest may have existed overlapping time periods. You have, I think, a similar circumstance in, as we mentioned, northern and southern battles that occurred. I meant to make a chart on that, and I didn't get that completed and show the shifting of the years under which judge, but I didn't get that done. That would be a good project, Jenny. All right. Now, as we talk about Jephthah, the importance of vows. When you vow you're going to do something, you need to think that thing through. We talked about that from the standpoint of Ecclesiastes, where chapter 5, where the writer said that it's better not to vow than to make a vow and then say later it was a mistake, and then to go back on that. We need to be careful about the vows that we make. A third thing I want to, well, we didn't look about these human sacrifices. We mentioned it. I want to read it. In Leviticus chapter 18, Leviticus chapter 18, look if you will, beginning at verse 21. 18, verse 21. It says, "Thou shalt not give any of thy seed to make them pass through the fire to Molech, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy God. I am Jehovah." Don't do that. Don't offer sacrifice of humans. In chapter 20, in verses 2 through verse 5, he said, "Moreover, thou shalt say to the children of Israel, whosoever he be of the children of Israel, or of the strangers that sojourn in Israel, that giveth of his seed unto Molech, he shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. I also will set my face against that man, and will cut him off from among his people, because he hath given his seed, or of his seed, unto Molech, to defile my sanctuary, and to profane my holy name. And if the people of the land do at all hide their eyes from that man, when he giveth of his seed unto Molech, and put him not to death, then I will set my face against that man, and against his family, and will cut him off, and all that play the harlot after him, to play the harlot with Molech, from among their people." What did God want done to anybody who offered their son or daughter as a sacrifice to an idol? Let me ask you, you think God would accept the same sacrifice? Well, obviously not. Obviously not. So my point is, regarding what Jephthah did, was not pleasing to God, period. To assume that he did or he didn't. To make the vow is the thing that I want to emphasize. Now, you've got a point, Chris. You mentioned David. David is listed as one of the heroes of faith. So is Samson. But we know many of the things that Samson did were not right. Jephthah is listed in Hebrews chapter 11 as one of the heroes of faith. If he followed through and did this, which he may have, I don't know. But if he followed through and did this, then what he did was wrong. But what I want us to see is in this is premeditation. Just thoughtlessness. Here's a man who foolishly made a vow to commit sin, thinking not about what might come out of his house. But be that as it may, think that thing through. The lesson is not on whether or not he did. The lesson is making vows.
I'm not aware of any place where God tells us to make any kind of vows. God asks for our faith and for our lives and to obey him. We don't need to go throwing in these other things. That's sort of like the modern day. When I went to school in Mexico, like every other cathedral we went to, because God saved some guy from something, and he vowed to build this big church to God, which of course,
Well, we might want to do some more thinking about the Nazarite vow that it certainly appears that... Well, Jephthah did make one up, yes. The Nazarite vow was one that, it was different in that regard. Jephthah, like I say, is foolish to make such a vow. He didn't think that through. Pardon me? A command? I think the conditions of it were, and we're going to talk about that when we talk about Samson, but we'll hold that until we get over to get on the right page here. Chapter 13. I'm sorry, Judges, chapter 13. It says in verse 4, verse 4, it says, "Now therefore beware, I pray thee, and drink no wine nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing, for lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to save Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." Now, as far as I know, this is the beginning of what I know about the Nazarite vow. We can talk more about that a little bit later, but yes. Number six, yes, footnoted here. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, and once you take it on, you take on the conditions associated with it, so it becomes a part of it. Yeah.
If somebody doesn't just stop the top of their head, make
no.
Here's how I'm going to. Yeah.
But that's what Jephthah did.
My question was really about the command. Samson was parents were commanded.
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. Okay. Good observation. All right. Vows. Well, as we turn the page just a little bit further, chapter 12, the men of Ephraim upset with Jephthah. Why? All right. And why didn't he? Well, he had enough people, and we note further in verse 2 of chapter 12, Jephthah said unto them, "I and my people were at great strife with the children of Ammon, and when I called you, ye saved me not out of their hand. And when I saw that ye saved me not, I put my life in my hand, and passed over against the children of Ammon, and Jehovah delivered them into my hand. Wherefore then are ye come up unto me this day to fight against me?" Doesn't really sound like he completely ignored them, does it? But the point being, they want to do battle with him. Now, the Gileadites over here fight against the Ephraimites over here. And notice, if you will, that 42,000 in verse 6 of the Ephraimites are killed at that time. Now, the circumstance I find interesting. The Ephraimites are essentially being chased back across the river by the Gileadites. But the Ephraimites can only pass where the Jordan River has afford. What did the Gileadites do at the fords? A vocabulary test. All right, go ahead with that. All right, so they found out that 42,000 of them needed to be killed, and it would appear that some were trying to pass themselves off as not being Ephraimites, when in fact they were. So 42,000 Ephraimites were killed. I put that up because I want you to be impressed with these numbers. We're talking still about those among the Israelites. They're killing each other. Did you catch that? They're killing each other. 42,000. This particular time. The Philistines came to Palestine from the island of Crete. We talked about that when we introduced our series on history and geography, where the population of this area came from, Genesis chapter 10, verse 14. The Philistines had a knowledge of iron. Why was that so important? Weapons, yeah, they knew how to make swords and chariot wheels and various things such as that that gave them an edge as far as military is concerned. Shamgar is the first Israelite named who fought against the Philistines. We talked about that earlier in Judges chapter 3, where he killed 600 men with an ox goad. Samson, Eli, Samuel, Saul, David all had their conflicts with the Philistines. We'll talk more about that as we get to some of those. Some were in the land as early as Abraham's day, although we don't observe a particular threat at that time. The Philistines are not listed in the list of seven nations that are to be conquered, which would indicate they were not a threat during the time of Abraham's day, but they certainly became a threat during this time, the time of Samson. That brings us over, if you will, to chapter 13. And I want to pick up a little bit there. Chapter 13, as has been read already in verse 5, that he shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to save Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. Tell me about how that Samson came to be in the position that he was in to lead these people. All right. All right, good. And of course, when Samson was born, he saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines, and he had to have her. And that brings us up to chapter 14. I find this interesting as well, this portion of the story. Sometimes we don't talk too much about it. But it says in verse 2, he came up and told his father and his mother and said, I have seen a woman of Timnah, of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me to wife. Then his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among all my people that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleaseth me. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of Jehovah, for he sought an occasion against the Philistines. Now at that time, the Philistines had rule over Israel. Underscore that in your thinking. When we see on the map here the invasion of the Philistines into the people of God, it tells us that they have an upper hand. They have control of the people of God. Samson wants this woman. Get her for me. Deuteronomy chapter 7. Exactly. Deuteronomy chapter 7. They were not to intermarry with the heathen nations. And why? Take them away from God. And what about Samson? Got him in trouble, didn't it? You'll note in the text, in verse 8, it tells us after a while he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. Now, Samson comes up with a riddle. What was the riddle? Verse 14, he said unto them, out of the eater came forth food, and out of the strong came forth sweetness, and they could not in 3 days declare the riddle. All right, Samson basically makes a bet. I want to tell you a story. If you can tell me what it means, then you'll get this, and if you can't tell me what it means, then you owe me. What was being waged? 30 changes of clothing. Go ahead. All right. Well, God was. Yeah. In verse 4. Yeah. That's right. All of these things kind of lead to one upon another that results in Samson eventually being killed. But in the long and short of it all, he kills many of the Philistines to become a deliverer. Now, I want to back up on this chart just to make this point. In all of these events with Samson's wife, and Delilah, and all of those events, Samson's engagements with the Philistines are all personal conflicts that result in the killing of a lot of Philistines. He doesn't lead an army. He doesn't have a following as such. They're just personal conflicts that begin with this woman. You're right. And this was the plan of God to conquer the Philistines and to use Samson, of course, to do that. Now, this bet, this riddle, how was it known what the riddle was about? Of course, we've just read the background of it, how that he saw a lion that was dead and a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey within the body of the lion. And then this riddle that he sets forth, and they don't know what it is. But how did they find out? Yeah. Look, if you will, at verse, let's back up a verse or two before we look at that. When you look at verse 15, following the riddle of verse 14, it says, it came to pass on the seventh day that they said unto Samson's wife, entice thy husband that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn thee and thy father's house with fire. Have ye also, or have ye called us to impoverish us? Is it not so? So these men, these companions, as it were, of Samson, say to Samson's wife, you find out and tell us what the riddle is. And what does she do? She nags him for 7 days about this riddle. And finally, he told her the riddle, and she tells the men of the city then what that meant. And this brings us down to verse 18, where it is said, what is sweeter than honey, and what is stronger than a lion? And he said unto them, if ye had not plowed with my heifer, ye had not found out my riddle. Now, with that expression, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would know. What is he saying to them? You messed with my wife, or you would know. That's right. Now, because they did this, the text tells us in verse 19, the Spirit of Jehovah came mightily upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and smote 30 of them and took their spoil and gave the changes of raiment to them that declared the riddle. And his anger was kindled, and he went up to his father's house. But Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend. Do you see the mess that's taking place here? These 30 companions get it out of his wife what the riddle is. And he goes and kills 30 of them so that he can take their garments and pay off his wage. And when he takes their clothes and pays off his wage, the text tells us that his father-in-law gives his wife to somebody else. Now, when Samson comes back and he wants to go in to his wife, and his father-in-law says, no, you can't do that. I've given your wife to somebody else. What then does Samson do? Verse 4, chapter 15. He caught 300 foxes and took firebrands and turned tail to tail and put a firebrand in the midst between every two tails. And when he had set the brands on fire, he let them go into the standing grain of the Philistines and burnt up both the shocks and the standing grain and also the olive yards. Now, we might look at that and say, well, that's the expression of a young man's wrath. Well, yeah. Kind of like taking two cats and tying their tails together and throwing them over the clothesline. These foxes, they don't like being tied together with a fire between them. And so when they run, they don't stop running. And they set everything on fire and burn up the grain and the olive yards of the Philistines. Now, how did the Philistines respond to that? Well, no, they came and got this woman and her father's house, and what do they do to them? All right, they burned them. Well, what does Samson then do? You see, we've got a tip that thing going on here. That's what they did, and now Samson responds. What does he do? Look at verse 8. He smote them hip and thigh. What's that mean? He killed a lot of them. Yeah. That expression you may not be quite so familiar with, but you are familiar with the expression that it cost an arm and a leg. Well, this battle of the Philistines cost them a hip and a thigh. In other words, it was quite costly to them. Samson took revenge. Now, the people of Israel, in particular Judah, is where, as you see, the bulk of this is taking place. They've had enough of this battle between Samson and the Philistines. So what do they want to do to Samson? We want to turn him over to the Philistines. Look at what he's doing. All this battle, somebody's going to get caught in the shrapnel of this. So, what does Samson desire then that they do? Go ahead, tie me up, deliver me to the Philistines. So, that's what they did. And the text tells us in verse 14 that when he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted as they met him, and the Spirit of Jehovah came mightily upon him, and the ropes that were upon his arms became as flax that was burnt with fire, and his bands dropped from off his hands. And he found a fresh jawbone of an ass and put forth his hand and took it and smote 1,000 men therewith. And Samson said, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of an ass, have I smitten 1,000 men. Did that make the Philistines happy? No, they weren't real happy about that. And then what did they do? Well, you'll drop down to verse 20 and you find just a summary statement that he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. But that's not all of it. We've got a pause going on here, but what we do have is Samson meets a woman who's a harlot. What's her name? Delilah. Yes, Delilah. And in the interim here, the first few verses of chapter 16 tells us that Samson was with her, and the Gazites decide that they want to do something with Samson. And so what does Samson then do? Let's move on here just a little bit. Folks over here in Gaza, they're not happy with Samson. So they want to harm him. What does he do? He takes their city gates, the gates to the city, and he takes them up on Mount Hebron over here, which is about 20 miles away, 3,000 feet elevation. Of course, Gaza over here on the coast. Samson was really strong. Did we tell you that? Okay. So he takes the gates of their cities 20 miles away and puts them on the top of the mountain. And then that afternoon, the text tells us that he loved this woman, Delilah. Back up and get that story now. And it says, the lords of the Philistines, verse 5, came up unto her and said, entice him and see wherein his great strength lieth, and by what means we may prevail against him, that we may bind him to afflict him, and we will give thee, every one of us, 1,100 pieces of silver. Now, you let me talk for a while. Tell me the story of Samson and Delilah.
Well, the Philistines get the ear of this woman, too.
All right.
And she plies him for information several times in a row. And he gives her different stories as to where his strength lies. They want to find out how they can overcome him. So, skipping past all the details.
Now, I want details. Yeah, yeah. First thing he said, if you bind me with
seven fresh cords,
these, I understand, were strings that were used for a bowstring. And if you bind me with these, then I can't get away. All right, so she binds him with that and thinks that he can't get away and hollers the Philistines. And what does he do? He snaps them loose and she's upset because he's storied to her. Now, he says, if you bind me with new ropes, then I'll be like other men. Well, scratch your head and wonder why that didn't work in chapter 15, verse 13. And then, if you weave seven locks of my head with the web and fasten it with a pin, then I can't get away. And of course, she hollered the Philistines, and he pulled the pin out, and all was good. He beat up the Philistines. And then, what was the final straw? Oh, yeah. You really don't love me. Yeah.
I love 16. His soul was annoyed to death.
Yes. Okay.
She finally rings it out of him.
Verse 17. He told her all of his heart. And what was the issue here?
What?
All right. His Nazarite vow. Let us understand, it wasn't just the length of his hair. It was the Nazarite vow. He had taken a vow before God. As long as he was faithful to his vow, God was with him in this purpose. But when he gave up his vow, what happened? God was not with him. God was not with him. And now that she has had his hair cut, God is not with him. And she cried, the Philistines. And what did Samson think he could do? Thought it'd be just like it always was. And what happened? He was weak. God was not with him. In verse 20, it says, he awoke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times and shake myself. Do not that Jehovah was departed from him. And the Philistines laid hold on him, and they put out his eyes, and they brought him down to Gaza and bound him with fetters of brass. And he did grind in the prison house. Howbeit, the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven. Let's pause right there. When he's bound and put in the prison house at the grinding wheel, what job does Samson have?
It's like he's a slave and doing a job an animal could also do. Not where the, like a donkey or something would just walk around in circles.
And turn the wheel.
Grind the wheel.
Yeah. Or turn the grinding wheel. Yeah.
Pitiful.
Yeah. Not a very good state to be in. In verse 23 through the next several verses, we note that while he was in such a pitiful state, the people came to praise their god Dagon and make fun of Samson because of his pitiful state. You'll see at verse 27. And then Samson called upon the Lord, verse 28. And he said, "Remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes." Now I want to pause one more time and notice that his purpose is to seek vengeance. Go ahead. Sure. Uh-huh. Because he had broken the vow that he had made with God. The Nazarite vow, a part of that vow, not all of it, but a part of that vow was that a razor would never touch his head. And now he's told Delilah that the source of his strength essentially is in the vow that he made to God. And a part of that was that his hair would not be cut. And now she has had his head shaved. So he's broken his vow. And God's not with him. So now he's in a terrible plight. Okay? But his hair begins to grow, indicating that he realizes that the source of his strength is not him. The source of his strength is God. And he appeals to God to avenge him for his two eyes. And how does this all wind up? All right, the house of Dagon, which was the Philistine, I guess you would call it god of a fish, had a head like and arms like a man, but body like a fish. And so this Philistine god in this temple, and all these people come to praise their god, and Samson pushes the pillars apart that hold the thing together, and it all falls in, and it kills 3,000 in his death. Now remember, he's already killed a whole bunch of the Philistines. But in verse 27, we learn that there were about 3,000 that were there that beheld while Samson made sport. So we've just got a bad situation. But Samson does kill them. Go ahead. King of Assyria.
Yeah. Babylonians and the people before
them. Nebuchadnezzar and Shalmaneser.
Yeah. Yeah. The name of the people.
Assyrians and Babylonians. Okay.
All of those people. Now, this appears to be the first time that he's used a person whose ladder doesn't run all the way to the ground. I mean, this guy is really dense. The guy is so enticed by these women that he's got no brain at all.
Okay. Okay. Yes.
That's the beginning of time thing too. Adam ate the apple. It's just things that we do.
Okay. Well, we don't know what it was, but you're right. It's sometimes we're just not too bright. Roy, and then Joey. Joey? Well, my comment on that would be yes, as we've looked at Samson's motives, they were all personal. They were all personal. But God used that to accomplish his end against the Philistines.
He did, but we shouldn't conclude from that that God condoned him seeking revenge.
That's true. Any more than we should conclude that Shalmaneser was a good guy. Shalmaneser was a scumbag. He was not a good guy. But God used that wicked king to punish his people. Nebuchadnezzar was really not the greatest guy. But God used him to punish his people. And so yes, when God uses a person or a nation to accomplish his end does not validate the motives as honorable that characterize that person or nation. That's right. Yeah, go back to verse 4 or verse 3 of chapter 14. Yeah, this was the purpose of God to use Samson. Yeah, and that's why Samson was allowed to have this woman initially to be his wife. It initiated these chain of events. True.
But there was also at the end of chapter 15, it says, so he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. Can we assume that those were days of peace or relative, you know, lack of warfare? 20
well,
years goes by, and then
you've got the same statement in verse 31 before you begin chapter 17. It says that he judged Israel 20 years. So you would like to think that in that respect he did provide some deliverance from the Philistines. But as far as changing their attitudes, there's no immunity shot that you can give these people that is going to keep them from worshiping idols. They're going to do what they please. They might realize their dependence upon God for a while, but their attitude is deplorable, as you read in chapter 17, the familiar statement that occurs over and over and over and over and over through this 305-year period. They did that which was evil. Whatever deliverance that Samson provided, it was only temporary. Only temporary. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, isn't that interesting? Well, that's right. Well, we have talked about Samson and Delilah in Judges chapter 16. Judges chapter 16, verse 21. Let me catch up with where I want to begin. I think that's the place right there. Yeah, right there. In our next study, am I out of time? In our next study, I want you to read the rest of the book of Judges, but for my purposes, I want you to go into 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel. Pick up with chapter 1, verse 1. Just read on into 1 Samuel. Okay?